I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. 85 years since the Second World War erupted with Germany's invasion of Poland, the world now faces the threat of another catastrophic conflict, this time ignited by Israel's relentless war on Gaza. The British Lancet journal estimates perhaps 186,000 or nearly 10% may have been killed. Doctors, journalists, infants, entire families wiped from existence, all under the guise of self-defense backed by the United States, which has funneled over 50,000 tons of weapons and military hardware into Israel's arsenal. But beneath Israel's much-vaunted Iron Dome lies a nation in turmoil, fractured by deep political divisions, a military reportedly stretched thin, and an international reputation that's plummeting. Is Israel on a path to self-destruction? And how much longer can it count on Washington as more Americans question their government's backing of a regime seen as a liability? Joining me now from Tel Aviv is Danny Ayalon, Israel's former deputy foreign minister and ex-ambassador of Israel to the United States. Ambassador, welcome back to the program. It's been 4 years. Given Israel's actions have led to Iran now almost daily threatening your country, as a former advisor to Netanyahu, former ambassador to the USA, do you believe Iran has nuclear weapons already? Fran Etzion, the former deputy boss of Israeli intelligence, saying Israel would lose in any conflict against Iran.
Yeah, well, first of all, Afshin, it's good to be with you again, although took us a few years to reconnect. Nevertheless, I enjoy your show. So about Iran, I would tell you, I don't think that they are quite capable now of detonating a nuclear device. Although they may be on the cusp of it, they do have enriched uranium, not weapon grade, but enough to turn it into weapon grade. And then it will take them few more months, if not a year or so, to weaponize it. So I don't think that they have it. But I think that it is quite clear today, with all, as you mentioned, catastrophic events in the Middle East and beyond, that Iran is actually the head of a terror apparatus. The Ayatollahs of Iran are a very radical regime, very I would say dangerous one, and they are actually using proxies around the Middle East and even beyond that to, I guess, bring about a new hegemony where they would like to take over the Middle East. Meanwhile, they're using terror.
Obviously, Iran say they're not proxies. These are just resistance groups that support Iran. But having said what you just said, do you think now that Israel is the most dangerous place in the world to be a Jew?
No, actually, I think it's still the safest place to be a Jew. Unfortunately, as you mentioned,
you literally just told me that Iran is on the verge, maybe of next year, having nuclear weapons. We've seen all the resistance forces. Why is it safe to be Jewish
because,
in Israel?
Right, Because describing Iran and the danger from the Ayatollahs is only half the picture. The other half, of course, is our defense capabilities. You know, on the 14th of April, a few months ago, they launched for the first time. And that also shows, by the way, that they're losing their nerves. More than 300 different rockets and drones. All of them, but one, were intercepted and...
Ambassador, we know that Iran says that those were deliberate decoys to get intelligence. But again, going back to this point, you know how many Jewish people are emigrating from Israel. Your economy is in tatters and people are leaving en masse from Israel to other countries.
I don't think so. You know, actually, I live here and I talk to people... Israelis, Jews at large, you know, we like to complain, to discuss, to look at an issue from every corner. But no, Israelis are staying, and actually, we have more Jews coming from abroad, especially from the United States. And here again, you mentioned, you know, unfortunately, Israel is standing today in the world for various reasons, but. Some of them are downright anti-Semitic, and anti-Semitic is also rising. And by the anti-Semitic, actually moving up, you know.
Before we get onto that, I do want to get onto that. But you just said people aren't leaving. 30,000 official figures leaving up till March, between November and March. So what are you talking about? Why are these 30,000 Jews all leaving? They're leaving because Israel is not a safe place to be Jewish. anymore, surely.
No, I think the statistics are wrong. And if you look at Jews who may even want to emigrate, you know, to leave, they keep their families here. So they are very, very mobile. And, you know, when the war started, when we were, you know, savagely attacked, the massacre of the 7th of October, we had thousands, if not more, of Israelis who live abroad, who were on tours abroad. They were all converging in. There were no places on incoming flights. So this is not a problem whatsoever. The Israelis are quite resilient. We like.
Well, you know why I'm asking anyway, Ambassador. I'm asking because the Jewish authorities in Israel keep talking about how Israel is a place that's safe for Jews when many Jews, I would say, in the diaspora say, now's not the time to visit. Why do you think Israel media was banned from reporting on Lebanese resistance strikes on Shin Bet, Mossad, Unit 8200 just in the past few days? Because it was a 5 a.m. reporting restriction in Israel, blackout of all media. Why was the media banned from reporting on these successful resistance strikes on Mossad, Unit 8200, and Shin Bet?
That's a very good question. There was nothing to report about. And again, I think that you fall to prey into propaganda, either from Tehran or Hezbollah of Lebanon.
I'm not asking. I'm just asking about freedom of speech and freedom of the press. Why?
There's nothing happened.
Why were the reporting restrictions instituted at 5 a.m. on all Israeli media?
Because all of them were intercepted. You see, if there is one thing, any event occurring in Israel, you know, we are an open country, transparent, with really very, very energetic press. You cannot hide anything here. So if you didn't see any bombs falling on Tel Aviv or anywhere else, it's just because it didn't happen. Because otherwise,
if Hezbollah failed, why would you need to put reporting restrictions? Surely you should be crowing about it and saying how successful Israel was, not banning all Israeli media from covering it, unless you're trying to cover something up. And Mossad, Unit 8200, and Shin Bet were actually hit hard.
No, not really. Actually, I just drove by this morning, and everything is intact. There was not really a restriction. The restriction was only for the Israeli preemptive attack. And this was because of security considerations, and that was it. But if you look at the results, yes, they did try to launch quite a few, can't remember the number, but could have been even in the hundreds. But they were all taken before they even launched. And
well, we don't know. Sorry, Ambassador. Yeah. But because reporting restrictions, I'm a journalist, reporting restrictions were imposed, anything you say we cannot be corroborated because the Israeli government is banning journalists from covering it. Why does the Israeli military headquarters, why is it 450 meters from a hospital, Ichilov Hospital on Wiseman Street in Tel Aviv? Why do the Israelis put their military structures near hospitals and schools in Tel Aviv, Eilat, in Israel? Why?
I'm not sure that this is the case. You know, you could ask the same: is why the Pentagon? You know, why the Ministry of Defense of England? They are all happen to be located in the capital.
And the Pentagon is not 450 meters from one of Washington's biggest shopping malls. Why did the Israelis place their facilities near hospitals and schools?
There is no deliberate putting them near schools or anything like that. And in any case, the schools are safe, as Tel Aviv is safe, because we have the best missile ballistic defense ever. And this is why we see how Iran and Hezbollah failed time and again. Where does Hezbollah successful? When they hit our Galilee communities, when they do it, when they target civilian homes, and when they do that, you see it, you know, when they do hit or burn an open field in Israel, you see it. but they are not coming and not moving beyond that because they know it will be devastating for them. Look, the situation is that, yes, Israel is now fighting a multi-front war. But as far as our intelligence capabilities, as far as our operational and technological superiority, we feel quite safe here. And the results are that, on the one hand, you know, in Gaza, we had Hamas, which turned Gaza into a one major bunker, 400 feet, actually deep, tunnels with multi-layer and hundreds of thousands of kilometers, hundreds of kilometers of tunnels, and we are taking them out in an operation.
You're banning journalists from being able to cover the operation by the Israeli government. We don't know how successful you've been. But regarding why Israel put their military facilities near Jewish homes and Jewish schools, you'd find it acceptable then for resistance forces to, as collateral damage, Israeli hospitals to be destroyed? Say the Ichilov Hospital. If that gets destroyed, it's right next to the military headquarters. So it's just acceptable collateral damage?
No, I'll tell you what you're referring to is, yes, headquarters, which are offices. You have their offices. We don't have their guns. We don't have their missiles or launchers, not at all. Like Hezbollah is and Hamas were putting their launchers inside homes.
Wait. Wasn't it Lebanese resistance offices in West Beirut that you targeted? They were offices, weren't they? Just like the in Tel Aviv.
Well, these are offices. Their offices, unfortunately, have guns in them. Ours do not. And
there are no guns at this Israeli military headquarters on Weizmann Street in Tel Aviv.
Not at all. You have their people who go to work. You have their offices, and it's not a military. It's a military headquarters as such, but not a military installation. And by the way, again, you know, if you look at results, Hamas, when they started their operation or their attack on the 7th of October, they launched hundreds of missiles. How many missiles Hamas is launching now? Zero. Why? Because we systematically took them out because we know how to defend ourselves. The same thing may happen with Hezbollah if Hezbollah does not, let's say, quiet down, if Hezbollah will not fulfill United Nations Security Council Resolution 1701, by which they have to pull out their illegal military units, which also are called for to be it's a militia that has to be, according to 1701, has to be dismantled. If they do not do that, we will have to take care of it. But
Ambassador,
we are still giving diplomacy a chance.
Ambassador Danny Ayalon, I'll stop you there. More from the former Israeli Deputy Foreign Minister and ex-ambassador of Israel to the United States after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the former Israeli Deputy Foreign Minister and ex-ambassador of Israel to the United States, Danny Ayalon. Ambassador, thank you so much, as I said, for your explanations in part one of how you say the operations in Israel have been very successful. As I said, journalists are not allowed to go in and verify the claims made by Israeli authorities and the ones you just made in part one. But then what about these torture programs that have been covered in Israeli media? What's the reason for Israel's torture programs at Sde Timan in the Negev prison? The UN Special Rapporteur Alice Jill Edwards itemizing Jews sexually torturing Arab prisoners.
Well, Abshin, do you remember Abu Ghraib, the American installation? When you talk about the United States, when you talk about Israel, fully democratic countries with rule of law, then there is ramifications.
Many people around the world don't think the United States or Israel are countries by the rule of rule. The presidential candidate, Donald Trump, doesn't believe that the United States is currently a country of law. But anyway.
But still, I see millions of people are trying to come into America. I don't see them are trying to come into China or into Iran or into Russia. So I think we have to really understand reality.
Sorry, what's this got to do with the torture in the Negev prison?
Because I wanted to say that just like in the United States, in Israel, there is a rule of law. And once there are irregularities, there is no torture in Israeli jails. And if some, let's say, rogue soldiers or jailers are doing anything which is illegal, not only they are taken out, they are charged, and they're going to stay in prison. I think you are referring to one case where we have, I mean, the Israeli authorities actually arrested five jailers, and they are now undergoing investigation and trials. So this is very exceptional. And, you know, to every rule, unfortunately, there is an exception. But it's not like in Iran or other countries.
I don't think
like
anyone's talking about systematic rape and execution of prisoners in Iran. I mean, the last I heard of things like this was Abu Ghraib, and it was the United States carrying out. Of course, polls in the United States show most Americans in the United States favor a Palestinian state. I mean, clear now that your former boss, his only option is to draw the United States in to this conflict, and Iran are not biting, have not been biting since the Israeli assassination of Ismail Haniyeh. And what is Israel going to do when the United States, whether it be this generation or the next, says, goodbye, Israel. We hate Israel because of what Israel does as regards human rights violations.
Well, we are quite capable of defending ourselves by ourselves.
Wait. Sorry, Ambassador. Sorry to interrupt so quickly, but you're not, are you? Because that's why the Americans are giving you tens of billions or hundreds of billions of dollars of weapons. Without the United States, you don't have a country.
I don't think so. If you look at the United States defense aid to NATO, to South Korea, to Japan, it's 100 times what they are doing with Israel. And with Israel, it's more security cooperation. They enjoy our technology. They enjoy our strategic and tactical, I would say, innovations. And also, the U.S. and Israel are natural allies because of the systems. You know, democracies support democracies. Not only that, Israel, they know that the United States, Israel is the most dependable ally of the United States in the region and at all. And if they need, and they, their interest is to have stability in the region, their interest is not to have oil prices hike. They know Israel can take care of it.
Wait. Why? Take care of it by controlling Arab neighbors. Saudi Arabia, the UAE. What do you mean controlling oil prices by sending in arms to Israel? I mean, actually, I was going to ask about that. Is your view that the Gaza operation, which, as I said, may have killed 10% of the population, which is equivalent of killing, say, 5.5 million people in Britain, 27 million people in the United States, that's the proportionate numbers killed in Gaza, according to the estimates from the Lancet British Medical Journal. Is it your view that what needs to happen now is that every Arab in Gaza and Christian needs to go to the Sinai desert?
No. So first of all, let me just correct one thing. When I was talking about oil prices, you know, if there is instability in the Middle East, oil prices are being dictated basically in the Gulf countries. United States, although it is now self-sufficient on its energy supplies, they don't need oil prices hike because it's inflation and everything that goes with it. So this is why they need stability. This is why they need a strong Israel. When Israeli deterrence, unfortunately, was hurt on the 7th of October, it was very important to reestablish this deterrence. How do you reestablish this deterrence? By winning against all this dictatorial and
Israel doesn't have any deterrence anymore. The Lebanese have been bombing Israel in the past few days. Iran bombed Israel for the first time ever in the past few months. Yemen is bombing Israel. I don't even remember when it last did that. It doesn't have any deterrence. But I'm just asking, why on earth you think that oil prices in any way are to do with this? And whether the numbers killed, actually, you know that Israel's reputation right now is in tatters all around the world.
Well, yes, and this is very unfortunate. And again, here, I think that the true story is not being revealed. Like you are telling me about millions of Gazans being killed, which is nothing of even near.
No, I wasn't saying millions. It was proportionate based on the British
proportionate, yes. But journey. Even proportionate is not close to it, because I tell you what, the Hamas terrorists in Gaza, they are mostly killed. So there are no official numbers.
How do we know that? You're not allowing journalists in.
Listen, we are in Gaza. You're not in Gaza and others are not in Gaza. We are in Gaza.
Yeah, but I'd like to go to Gaza, and you're deliberately not allowing journalists into Gaza.
You'll be very welcome when it's safe. Right now, it's all booby trap, it's all terroristic bastions, and we're taking care of it. It's taking time because we want to spare the Gazan people who are not involved. But most of the people that were killed were armed because they were Hamas members. And Hamas is putting themselves and positioning themselves in
schools. Look, nothing you're saying can be verified because you're not allowing journalists in. You're saying it's not safe. I was in Damascus during the war, which Israel supported against Assad with the European Union and the United States. They didn't have a problem with journalists going in while there was your old boss Netanyahu treating ISIS-Daesh on the Golan Heights. We saw pictures of that. Why is it you're not responding about the plan for Gaza? Because you said it on the Qatari television station. You were on this Qatari television station saying you want the people of Gaza to go to Sinai. Is that still your view?
No. What I meant was that they should clear the way. You know, these innocent civilians in Gaza should clear the way. This would have been the best for them, to clear the way so the Hamas, you know, would face Israeli military face to face, mano a mano, and not go behind them. You know, what's happened with Hamas is that they, like cowards, they are hiding behind the civil populations. If they were targeting our civil populations, no more, because we took out all their missile capabilities, and now it's a mop-up operation. But I can tell you that I'll give you some numbers which are not totally verifiable because they all come from Hamas. They talk about 40,000 dead. I can tell you, out of these 40,000 dead, more than 20,000 are terrorists, armed terrorists, and the ratio of 1-to-1 is the lowest in the world.
You're not allowing journalists in, so we can't verify that. It's in your interest to tell me that. So 2 million odd Palestinians have to leave Gaza and go into the desert to live in tents, which is what you've said on the record. And then what? And then you'll destroy Gaza even more, kill everyone left. And then how many of the... So then the 2 million can then come back to Gaza. Is that your plan and the plan of Netanyahu?
But obviously this plan didn't take place. And this is why we saw, unfortunately, some casualties among the civilians. But the plan for Gaza is very simple. It's to de-radicalize Gaza and to demilitarize Gaza as it should have been, according to all the international agreements. When this happens, and of course, we would very much like to see a prosperous Gaza, as we planned for it on 2005. August 2005, Israel left Gaza altogether to the last inch, giving it, hopefully, to a new era. But Hamas took over. They actually had a coup d'etat against the Palestinian Authority. They were killing Palestinian Authority officials. They took over.
As you are right now. You killed one the other day, didn't you? In the West Bank. We're running out of time. I've just got to ask you, you've long wanted Saudi Arabia to join the Abraham Accords. Why do you think Israel has no chance whatsoever of that dream that you and the Netanyahu administration and his people want of Saudi Arabia joining? If anything, Israel is more isolated than ever. You have an economy in tatters. Jews are leaving en masse. And you're preparing for the onslaught. I think Lebanese resistance and the Iranian government saying, oh, the waiting game is part of it. Those Jews will never be going back to the north, will they, anytime soon?
Well, I'm sorry to take an issue, but I think all what you have said is only through the prism of the Iranian Hezbollah, which is totally not true. They have their interest maybe to kind of bolster their own people and maybe morale, because they are in a low, very low point. And I will tell you one thing. There is only one solution for peace and prosperity in the Middle East, is that is the Sunni countries, Israel, the United States, and NATO having an alliance as we are having now against the forces of evil, which are the Iranian Ayatollahs, Hezbollah, Hamas, and behind them, of course, is North Korea and Russia, sometimes China. So there are two camps here, and there's no doubt which camp is winning and which camp will continue to win. And I'll tell you one more thing. The Gulf countries and Saudi Arabia, they need Israeli technology, because their problem is not just the security issues from Iran, the threats from Iran, but also it's the future for food security and water availabilities. This is where Israel is number one in the world.
Okay, well, it's number one at stealing water, according to the United Nations.
No, not at all. But, why the
country? But GCC countries are friends with anyone, but everyone, I should say. And certainly, you know, they have good relations with China and Russia. And Russia and China understand what NATO's doing, of course, in Western Europe. But I began this by talking about the Second World War. What do you think of the Lancet figures, then? This eminent British journal saying that 186,000 may have been slaughtered by UK, US, EU weaponry in the hands of the Israelis, equivalent, as I said, proportionately to 5.5 million people, men, women and children, mostly women and children, killed in Britain, or 27 million in the USA. What do you think of that British medical journal, The Lancet?
Well, again, I think either he is misinformed or he is downright lying. And you mentioned this is why Israel's position in the world is not the best, because of the libels and the lies against us, which, you know, we are not very capable of deflecting, because we're busy doing...
Why would The Lancet, although this study wasn't peer-reviewed, why would they make... What a blood libel. You're not comparing The Lancet to the Nazis, are you?
They are... I would say that the Ayatollahs of Iran, with their proxies like the Hezbollah and, you know, and their Shi'i... allies, whether it's the Shiite militias in Iraq or in Syria or the Houthis,
the Lancet in Yemen, medical journal.
They are the downright terrorists, and you know, unfortunately, you know, whatever I say white, you say black.
We're out of time. Ambassador Danny Ayolon, thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's it for our show. Our continued condolences to those bereaved by UK, US, EU armed genocide. We'll be back with a brand new episode on Saturday. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.